Welcome, and thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, IMS 11, Easier Than Ever. Today's teleconference will be recorded, will last approximately 60 minutes, and will conclude a live presentation of a question and answer session. In this teleconference, you'll learn about the major enhancements to IMS 11 and see how much easier it is to master its functionality. The speaker for today's teleconference is Rich Lewis, IBM Certified Software IT Specialist, IMS Advanced Technical Support. At this time, I'd like to hand it over to our speaker, Mr. Rich Lewis.
Sense that it's easier to manage, easier to operate, easier to integrate, easier for application development. And I'll go through the enhancements made in IMS version 11 that make all those statements true. You can look at page 2 for the agenda, but I'm going to go ahead to page 3 and begin there. IMS version 11 was introduced last year in September. It became generally available at the end of October of this year. Between that original announcement and the general availability, IMS ran a quality partnership program, or QPP as we call it, in which we had customers implement version 11 on their systems. By the end of August of this year, we had 5 customers already in production on version 11 with important and critical applications running on version 11. 3 of those customers had migrated all of their systems to version 11, and most of these customers have many systems. Many of them are parallel sysplex. Many of them have several production systems. Those customers in production were running 10 to 50 million transactions a day. That means by now, IMS 11 has run probably more than a billion transactions. That is billion with a B. So we can be confident that IMS version 11 has the reliability that IMS customers expect from their systems. The prerequisites for IMS version 11 are ZOS 1.9 with a high-level assembler toolkit, as in previous releases. If you use the IRLM, you don't have to, but if you do use it, then IRLM 2.2 is required, just as in version 10. For Java users, JDK 6.0 is required for Java in the JMP and JBP regions, but JDK 5.0 is sufficient for other Java environments. You may want to check the IMS 11 release planning manual for further information on prerequisites dealing with using IMS with associated products. Let me begin by talking about the enhancements in the system area. I'll begin on page 5. IMS 11 has added the capability to use dynamic allocation for IMS ACBA and IMS ACBB. You can do that by specifying a DFS MDA members for the ACB libs. When you use this capability, then only the active ACB lib will be allocated. The inactive one will not be allocated until it's needed by online change. And, of course, at online change time, the inactive ACB lib is allocated and becomes the active one, and the old active one becomes inactive and is deallocated. This means that you can make changes to those data sets, such as increasing their size or correcting any other errors or moving them, while the IMS system remains up. In fact, you could even change the ACB lib concatenation. In another area dealing with ACBs, page 6, IMS 11 has added a 64-bit ACB storage pool, which is optional. If you use it, then when we read members in from ACB lib, they will be cached in this 64-bit storage. That means we only have to read them in one time. Any further need to read them in to the system will not actually require a read. We'll just get them out of that 64-bit cache storage. That obviously can improve the performance if you're doing reads to the ACB lib now. There's another maybe surprising advantage to using this capability. It can allow you to create smaller PSB pool without increasing the number of IOs. And by using a smaller PSB pool, you may be able to save CPU time from IMS managing the pool, because when you do I/O to a very large PSB pool, we have to find space for the PSB, and that can take quite a path length if we have thousands of PSBs in a very large pool. The next enhancement in the system area is a change in the mixed case password support. Mixed case password support was added in version 10, so that if you have mixed case passwords in RACF, as of version 10, IMS would support that. The problem with that support as originally introduced is you had to bring down IMS to change the parameter that specified you wanted mixed case passwords. IMS version 11 has a new parameter value that says IMS will use whatever RACF has, and if the RACF has mixed case passwords, IMS will use mixed case passwords. That means that you can leave IMS up when you change to mixed case passwords. That makes it easier to migrate to mixed case because you don't need an IMS outage to do that. The next enhancements have to do with Transaction Manager, beginning on page 9. The query command has been extended in version 11 for TM resources. Previously, we only supported query TRAN and query for MSC resources. Now we've included queries for L terms, nodes, users, user IDs, and all of these support wildcards, so you get the advantages of type 2 commands with consolidated responses, and you get the advantage of wildcards, and you even can move from multiple display commands to get all the information you want, in some cases, to one type 2 query command to get the same information. The next TM enhancement is on page 10, and that is the support of transaction expiration. That is an input message timeout associated with the transaction code. You can specify this timeout value in the transact macro or for DRD users, in the create or update command, or if the transaction is created by the output creation exit, the exit routine can specify the timeout value. Let me explain how you might want to use this by giving you an example. Let's say you walk up to an ATM machine, and that creates an IMS transaction that's sent into IMS, and for some reason there's a problem in IMS, and the response doesn't get out to the ATM machine before the ATM machine times out. Then you probably may have seen this in an ATM machine. You get a message that says something like, service not available, please try later. In this case, before version 11 with this transaction timeout, the transaction is still processed by IMS, and the response is sent to the ATM machine. The ATM machine knows the user is no longer there, so the ATM machine doesn't do anything with it, except possibly sending it in a reversing transaction. Let's say you got $50 out of, you asked for $50 and the machine told you, service not available, but IMS took $50 out of your account. The ATM machine has to send in another transaction to put the $50 back in. With this support in version 11, that original transaction is not processed if it's timed out. Therefore, we've saved work in IMS and we've simplified the process. Page 11 shows a further enhancement in the same area. What I talked about on page 10 was specifying at the transaction level a timeout value. For OTMA input messages, you can specify a timeout value associated with that individual input message. That support is also available in version 10. So you can use this to give you finer granularity and specifying timeout values. It's done for OTMA because OTMA input messages are typically created by some kind of application program, which could put that timeout value in the header for the message. The next enhancement in the OTMA area on page 12, we now have ACK timeout capability for commit mode 0, that is commit then send. With commit mode 0, we commit the work and then we send the output message on a T-pipe, and we expect an acknowledgement of that output message. If we don't get one, as we don't get the ACK, then the T-pipe is hung. Version 11 allows you to specify a timeout value so that the message will be moved to a timeout message queue and the T-pipe can be used to deliver other messages. The next enhancement in the OTMA area is resource monitoring. This is a new client-server protocol that allows early detection and warning of possible OTMA problems. That is, we monitor the control blocks associated with unprocessed messages. And if we get too many of them, we have a potential problem of chewing up all of our storage and possibly causing an outage. With the new resource monitoring, OTMA members, such as IMS Connect, will be informed with a status message saying that, you know, we have a potential problem here. They can take a corrective action. A typical corrective action might be to send the input message to another IMS system in the same IMS Plex, or if we're not in an IMS Plex, to send a message back to the IMS Connect client, for example, that says, you know, this service is not available now. Please try later. Anyway, the point of this, the benefit of this, is to detect and address a problem so it doesn't become a catastrophic problem, possibly causing an IMS outage. So that's OTMA resource monitoring, making it easier to manage IMS systems and increasing our availability. The next enhancement on page 15 is a new kind of query command, query OTMA transaction instance, or OTMA TI, which you may use to display information about an individual transaction, that is a transaction instance, and you get the count of the messages for each T-pipe, and you can ask for the number of messages older than a specified age. That is, in my example on page 15, the age is 5 seconds, and so the query OTMA TI message 5 show tran shows us all the messages that are more than 5 seconds old and the transactions with which they are associated, as well as transaction counts. Page 16 shows support for type 2 commands for OTMA descriptors. This is somewhat like DRD that we introduced in version 10 for other kinds of resources. That, of course, did not include OTMA descriptors, but we have create, update, delete, and query commands for OTMA descriptors so that you can create them on the fly as IMS is running, making it easier to manage OTMA environments, and once again, increasing our availability. So as page 17 points out, there are several benefits for all these commands: ability to monitor OTMA activity, the ability to add and change descriptors, with all the benefits of type 2 commands. Now, of course, one of the primary users of OTMA is IMS Connect. So let's look at the enhancements in IMS Connect beginning on page 19. The first enhancement is TCP/IP auto reconnect. That protects us in a circumstance where TCP/IP fails. In version 10 or earlier, if TCP/IP fails, then you need to issue the open port command IMS Connect so that it reconnects to TCP/IP. Version 11, that operator action is not required because IMS Connect will automatically issue the open port command. If it fails because TCP/IP is not there, it'll wait a while and issue it again so it has a loop and timer logic. That eliminates the need for the operator to issue any command and will minimize recovery time in these obviously unusual circumstances of the loss of TCP/IP. Let's move to page 20. There's a new exit routine available in IMS Connect as of version 11. It's the IMS Connect port message edit exit. Let me give you an example of how this might be used. What the exit can do is change the input messages and output messages. The input messages as soon as they're received by IMS Connect, and the output messages just as IMS Connect is about to deliver them. The advantage of this is you may have some outside agency, either, you know, maybe outside of your company or your organization, that wants to or could use IMS as a service provider, but they control the format of the messages used to ask for the service and the format of the message used as the output of the service. You don't get to change that. So, but you have a transaction in IMS that would meet that need and you want to provide that service. You could write an exit routine so that you could take their input message, add the OTMA, IRM headers, etc., change it to the format needed by IMS transaction, and then when the output message comes out, you could strip off the IRM headers, format the message appropriate for this service, and you could provide the service, making it easier to integrate and modernize the IMS system in connection with this service. The last of the enhancements that I'm going to talk about today in IMS Connect is the recorder trace enhancements on page 21. What IMS Connect has done is used in version 11 is implemented the use of the base primitive environment external trace that says you can use multiple trace data sets, avoiding trace full conditions, and collect even more data when that's needed to improve the reliability of the trace data and the amount of data and the efficiency of the writing of the data, making problem determination easier. So let me move on to maybe the biggest news in the long run that comes in version 11. That's the implementation of Open Database and Universal Drivers. As you see on page 22, there was a teleconference given on October the 13th by Kyle Charlet of IMS Development. It's available in replay, where Kyle spent the entire teleconference talking about Open Database. And if you are interested in Open Database, then I recommend that you listen to that replay that's available. You can go to the IMS homepage and follow the links to the teleconferences. And you should listen to that to get more details. I will give you a quick overview of what Open Database is and what it means, beginning on page 23. Open Database provides direct access to IMS databases from Java programs on any platform. They can be on ZOS or distributed. It can be for Java Enterprise Edition, JEE, or non-JEE, that is Java Standard Edition. It uses IMS Connect for TCP/IP connectivity. So IMS Connect has a new role in version 11. It's a database gateway for database calls. We also have a new address space called the Open Database Manager. That's a common service layer address space. It manages the connections to ODBA. I'll show you all these things in diagrams on the following pages. First, let's go to page 24, which is a picture of an IMS environment before version 11 with Java programs. You can see on the IMS system on the right side for online system, a TM system, you can have JMPs for TM or DB control. You can have JBPs, those are Java application programs. And you can have Java application programs that run outside of IMS using, you know, Java in Kix for traditional database resource adapter access. For ODBA, you could be coming in from a JEE environment like WebSphere Application Server, or you could come in from a non-JEE environment like a DB2 stored procedure using ODBA. There was one thing we supported to get to IMS from a distributed environment, and that was WAS on another ZOS LPAR or WAS and distributed, but that required that you have WAS on ZOS on the same LPAR where IMS was. Now, actually, there are some other ways of getting IMS data, like, you know, Classic Federation or some other products that had some indirect access to IMS. But what we've done in version 11 is shown on page 25. Here the Java application programs are over on the left side. It could be a Kix system, or it could be a JEE or non-JEE Java environments. And you'll notice, that the connections are TCP/IP to IMS Connect. That's the new role for IMS Connect. The protocol we're using here is DRDA. Now, it's distributed relational database architecture. We're not relational, but we're using that protocol with our own DDM in it, obviously not a relational DDM, within DRDA. So we're leveraging that architecture, and using it for our hierarchical database. We have the input, the request comes in across TCP/IP with a DRDA protocol to IMS Connect. It passes it to the new address space, ODBM, which uses the same interface in IMS, the draw interface, which includes ODBA. So that gives us Java programs on any platform, ZOS, non-ZOS, JEE, non-JEE. If you can write a Java program, you can do database calls for IMS with full two-phase commit support and all those kinds of things, if you want it. Page 26 shows that you can even use this on the same LPAR with IMS. Here are our JEE and non-JEE environments are on the same LPAR, and we're going through the Open Database Manager. Obviously, the application doesn't do anything different here. We're running on the same environment, running the same application program. What this provides is potential protection from user 113 admins. That is, if either the JEE or non-JEE address space fails or admins during the middle of a DL1 call, it will not cause a user 113 admin of the IMS control region because IMS is still connected to ODBM, which for IMS's viewpoint is still managing the database calls. And there's another use or another configuration where Open Database can be used, as shown on page 27. And that just points out that we can use this across multiple ZOS LPARs. IMS Connect does not have to be on the same LPAR with the IMS system, and therefore IMS Connect can be on one LPAR, and an ODBM address space in an IMS system can be on another LPAR. Obviously, this would have great advantages for availability in a parallel sysplex or advantages capacity in a parallel sysplex. Page 28 just shows a combination of everything I've just shown you, showing all the ways that Java application programs can get to IMS across multiple platforms. The application programs can use universal drivers. This is a new concept for us in version 11, as shown on page 29. Universal drivers, with universal drivers, you have a single driver that supports both Type 4 and Type 2 connectivity, that is cross-platform for Type 4, same LPAR for Type 2. As I mentioned before, we're using DRDA, and we've also standardized the SQL. And one example is the use of virtual foreign keys to support hierarchy. Now, SQL, of course, was written for relational, and there's no hierarchy in relational. And so in relational, you can join tables, and you use foreign keys to join tables. If you think of a database hierarchy, what IMS is in relational terms, is a set of tables, that is, segment types, that are pre-joined. That is, there's a hierarchy to them. You know, we have parents that says we join to a particular segment occurrence or row in the segment type or table hierarchy. That's in the hierarchy. So we have used standard SQL concepts in the universal drivers. That says in previous implementations, when we wanted to do an insert with JDBC, we had to establish position in our hierarchy. So we had an insert with a where clause. Well, that's not standard SQL, and have a where clause and insert. We don't need that with the new universal drivers because we can use the concept of foreign keys. If you listen to Kyle Charlet's teleconference on its replay, Kyle will explain even more of that to you. The universal drivers are the universal database resource adapter, which uses JCA 1.5. That's for Java Enterprise Edition environments, including WebSphere Application Server. For JDBC, you use the universal JDBC driver. Then we have a universal DLI driver because we really are hierarchical, and there are some things you can do with DL1 calls that you cannot do with JDBC or SQL. And the reason for that is we have some things in DL1 that just have no relational counterpart. We have SSAs with command codes, and we have command codes for things like lock classes, subset pointers with DEDBs. There is no relational idea of those things. And so if you need to do those things, you can use the universal DLI driver, and you can use that in conjunction with a JDBC driver for other calls in your application. So that's a quick overview of Open Database. The benefits as shown on page 30 is it gives us access to IMS databases from any platform in a nice standard way of doing it. We have distributed two-phase commit, which is optional. It obviously uses XA in the distributed world, RRS and ZOS. You don't have to have two-phase commit, but it's available for you. We have the universal drivers for both kinds of connectivity, type 2 and type 4, all standards-based, and we even have added protection from user 113 admins. So Open Database is the basis for many future enhancements to IMS and making IMS easier to integrate into the wider world and making it easier for us to modernize our IMS applications. Let me move on now to some other database enhancements, beginning on page 32 with another major enhancement in version 11. That is database quies. Database quies is an update command to create recovery points. Well, we've had a command to create recovery points in the past with IMS. That was the old DBR command. But the database quies capability is a great enhancement for it. With this command, you specify databases or HowDB partitions or FastPath areas, and the recovery point is recorded in the recons, and the old is a switch. And obviously, we can use that for timestamp recoveries. What's important about the database quies capability is the databases are not taken offline. The database data sets are not closed, so we avoid all that possibly long elapsed time to do those things. And just as important, transaction programs and BMPs are not terminated. They are just internally quiesced at their next sync point. That means after they reach a sync, if they've done updates, after they've reached a sync point, they cannot do any more updates until we've reached the quiesce point. So that says all transactions currently running and all BMPs currently running have to reach a sync point if they've done any updates, and then we'll reach the quiesce point. Well, in a well-behaved world, the online transactions are probably typically going to get to a commit point within a tenth of a second or two-tenths or maybe a half a second. BMPs may take a little bit longer, but certainly a small number of seconds. So we expect to get to the quiesce point in a small number of seconds as opposed to doing the DBR command, which said we had to close all the database data sets, deallocate the data sets, and then we'd start them again. We had to allocate the data sets and open them, so we had an outage measured in multiple minutes instead of just a few seconds. So the benefits of database quiesce are pretty obvious. Absolute minimal disruption to create these recovery points because we do not deallocate and close data sets, and we do not terminate any transactions or BMPs. This command is coordinated across an IMS Plex if you're doing data sharing. And it may be used to eliminate regular DBRs of databases to create recovery points. Many installations DBR their databases every day so they can create a recovery point. That creates an outage every day that they inflict upon themselves because of the limitations of IMS before version 11. That outage will disappear in version 11 if you just use the database quiesce command. So that's big news, something we've been looking forward to in IMS for quite a while now. The next enhancement is in the FastPath area, page 34. With FastPath in version 11, there is an optional 64-bit buffer manager, and I've called it the dynamic 64-bit buffer manager because with this capability, not only are FastPath buffers put in 64-bit storage, but they are automatically allocated, and you get more buffers as needed, And the buffers can be of different sizes. Before version 11, FastPath had one size buffer, no matter what size CIs you had. But in version 11, with this optional capability, you do not specify any buffers at all. FastPath creates buffers as needed, in the sizes as needed, as FastPath recognizes the need for buffer. The I.O. is done directly from these buffers up in 64-bit storage. It's not just a staging area. And one other enhancement is that the overflow buffer allocations are not serialized. So multiple dependent regions or threads may be in their OVA buffers at the same time. The benefits of this 64-bit buffer manager is obviously ECSA constraint relief, possibly eliminating some ab-ins, support for multiple buffer sizes, and the fact that it's self-tuning in the sense that you don't specify any number of buffers. The system just dynamically adds buffers as they're needed. In fact, if you think of a situation where you wanted to add more dependent regions or threads, today, if you don't have enough buffers, you have to bring IMS down to find more buffers and bring IMS up. You wouldn't have to do that if you were using the 64-bit buffer manager because it will dynamically add more buffers, making it much easier to manage your FastPath system and the buffers that it uses. Another enhancement in the FastPath area is on page 36. That's an open option for the update database and update area commands. That is, on this Type 2 update database or area command, start access, which is like a start command, you can specify option open, and that will open the data sets associated with the database or the area before they're actually used by an application. And the last enhancements I want to mention in the database area is on page 37. That's an enhancement, the online reorganization for HALDB, mini performance enhancement. Maybe the biggest one is writing only one log record per block as far as possible. Online reorg is copying or reading segments and writing them into new data sets. So every time it inserts a segment, it needs to log that change. And typically you get three log records, one for the segment, one for the pointer you're updating, and one for a change in free space. And each database log record has about a 200-byte prefix. The way the logging is done is changed in version 11. So instead of writing individual log records, or three of them for each segment, we're going to combine and write one log record for the entire block as far as possible. So when we commit our work, we'll write one big log record, cutting out all those prefixes and dramatically reducing the amount of log records that we write. We're also going to use sequential access for vSAM KSDSs. We're going to get rid of, or we have gotten rid of, the get next and parent call for read-only databases because obviously there would be no children of the parents. And there's lots of things done to reduce the number of lock requests made so that the CPU overhead of getting all those lock requests is reduced dramatically. So we'll have reduced logging, reduced CPU consumption, and shorten elapsed times for online reorg for HALDB in version 11. Next, let me talk about some DBRC enhancements beginning on page 39. DBRC now optionally can use the base primitive environment for the online systems. What this provides is improved tracing and improved exit routines. There are four DBRC traces as shown on page 39, and you can use those with the BPE traces and taking advantage of the external trace, writing them to multiple data sets, whatever. The new exit management says that for the two DBRC exits that existed before version 11, the Recon IO and the security, that's the one for command authorization for DBRC commands, and for the new exit routine called the statistics exit, you can have multiple exits of each type. So if you have, let's say you buy a product from someone and it needs to use one of those exits, and you want to buy another product that needs to use the same exit, you can just install both exits instead of trying to write an interface so you can use two exits. You can combine two exits into one. You don't have to make that combination yourself. And the exits are refreshable. That is, you can update your exit without bringing IMS down. Now, probably something you might need to do if you use the security of the command authorization exit, because if you wanted to change your security, you don't have to bring IMS down in version 11. And finally, this new support includes specification of LSR buffers in a ProcLive member. In the past, you've used DSP buffs module to do that. It gets rid of the requirement to assemble and link that module. In version 11, you can, with this new BPE option, you can just specify those in a ProcLive member. So the benefits for BPE DBRC address regions is the improved tracing, better exit management, and a simplified definition of LSR buffers for the recons. Also in the DBRC area, as page 41 mentions, we have a new command to clean up the recons called cleanup recon command. It's used to delete old information in the recons, and you can specify either a time interval like 60 days or a timestamp like, you know, October the 1st that says, I want to get rid of all the data older than the time I specified that's in the recons, and it will delete prior log records, image copy, ALEC, reorg, and recovery information from the recons. The information is deleted even though image copy requirements are not met, like GenMax recovery period are not met. You know, GenMax says I want to keep three or four or five or whatever value you specify, number of image copies for each database data set or whatever I specified for the database data set. Similarly, recovery period says I want to keep all the image copies unless they're older than some time. The problem that many users have encountered here is they may have logs that are other support data sets like image copies that have been deleted physically because of an expiration policy. So the data sets are not there even if you wanted to have them, but we still have information about them in the recons. It was hard to get rid of that information in the recons. With this cleanup recon command, you can get rid of them. Obviously, the prilog records, we're not going to eliminate the whole record if we still got good information in it, so the logs are only deleted if nothing's used in the prilog and needed in the prilog record. Otherwise, logs within the prilog record will be compressed. So the benefits are shown on page 42. It really simplifies the maintenance of the recon, and especially useful if you have an expiration policy that deletes data sets that are still referenced in your recons. You don't need those references anymore if the data sets are not even available to you. And there's another use for it. You could copy your recons and issue the command to identify which data sets are no longer in use, which ones are older than a certain age. So that's another potential benefit for DBRC users. Well, that concludes the enhancements I have time to talk about today. So let me just say a couple of words about migration beginning on page 44. You can migrate to version 11 directly from version 9 or from version 10. You know, the recons can be upgraded. What we mean by that is really the recons, you can have a version 9 recon and upgrade it to version 11, or version 10 recon and upgrade to version 11. And the database recovery utilities like database recovery, change akim, et cetera, may use those two utilities may use as inputs image copies, logs, or change akim data sets that were created by version 9 or version 10. That is, you use the version 11 copy of the utility, the database recovery utility or change akim, to read those data sets created by previous releases. And as always with IMS, applications and databases are compatible. No program recompiles or relinks are required to go to a new version of IMS. And there is the usual coexistence support. That is, data sharing, shared queues, ISC, and MSC are supported between version 11 of IMS and version 9 and 10. And you can use ISC to talk to CICS or use DB control with CICS, or you can use DB2 as a database manager or have DB2 stored procedures use IMS databases with any supported release of CICS or DB2. So if CICS or DB2 is a supported release. It will work with version 11. Page 45 shows some coexistence maintenance. Just want to make you aware of that. There are two columns, one for version 9, one for version 10. You'll notice the version 10 column, there are only two coexistence APARs, one for the recons, the same kind of coexistence we always have, so you can upgrade your recons to version 11 and continue to use the old version of IMS. The ODBA says that you can use the older versions of IMS to access a version 11 system using it with ODBA. The version 9 column has many more coexistence APARs. Those were the coexistence APARs for going from version 9 to version 10. And since that is rather old maintenance because it was available about 2.5-3 years ago, almost surely have that maintenance already on your version 9 system. If you want more information on version 11, you can look at page 46. You can get the release planning guide, and that's one of the IMS publications, but all the IMS 11 publications are available at the Information Center, as shown on this page. You go there, look under version 11. You can get to all the manuals there. You can. It's easy to search, and once you found an item, if you want to look at the PDF version of that manual, you can just click on the PDF icon, and it will bring up that. And you can, of course, always look at the IMS family website, www.ibm.com/IMS, for more information about IMS. One thing I wanted to mention today is on page 47. This is not associated with version 11, but I just wanted to make you aware of it, and that is the IMS Enterprise Suite. This is a no-charge product, so you don't have to pay for it, but what it is a packaging mechanism, including SMP support, for components dealing with integration and modernization of IMS. I've listed some of them there. There are more of them. There are two teleconferences coming up that will talk about some of those components of the Enterprise Suite. I wanted to make you aware of that new no-charge product. So let's move to page 48. I just wanted to highlight some of the big news in version 11. Obviously, open database, making it easier for distributed access to IMS databases. And then database Quiesce, making it much easier, less painful to create recovery points with much greater database availability. There's OTMA resource monitoring, making it easier to manage remote transactions through IMS Connect, providing greater availability. And then there's the 64-bit storage exploitation through the FastPath 64-bit buffer manager and the 64-bit use by the ACB storage pool, making it easier for performance management and improving our performance by eliminating some potential IOs in IMS. And the final highlight I wanted to mention was ACB Live Dynamic Allocation, making it easier to manage ACB Live data sets and also increasing our IMS availability. So I think you will see that IMS 11 really is easier than ever. I thank you for listening today, and now I'm going to turn it back to the moderator. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Now we would like to ask you to participate in a brief electronic survey. Right after the survey, we will have a live Q&A session with the presenter. Your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time you take to answer these questions. To participate, simply press the star key, followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. Please listen to all the options before making your selection. Question number one. Please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was high, press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. If it was low, press star 3. Once again, please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was high, press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. If it was low, press star 3. Question number two, was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference? If it was at the right level, press star 1. If it was not technical enough, press star 2. If it was more technical than I needed to hear, press star 3. Once again, question number two, was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference? If it was at the right level, press star 1. If it was not technical enough, press star 2. If it was more technical than I needed to hear, press star 3. Please vote now. Question number three, what version of IMS are you currently on? If it is V10, press star 1. If it is V9, press star 2. If it is V8, press star 3. If it is V7 and lower, press star 4. Once again, question number three, what version of IMS are you currently on? If it is V10, press star 1. If it is V9, press star 2. If it is V8, press star 3. If it is V7 and lower, press star 4. Please vote now. Question number four, what is your planned use of IMS 11? If planned to upgrade IMS 11 within 12 months of October 2009 availability, press star 1. If interested in upgrading to IMS 11 within the next 2 years, press star 2. If no upgrade plan at this time, please press star 3. Once again, question number four, what is your planned use of IMS 11? If planned to upgrade to IMS 11 within 12 months of October 2009 availability, press star 1. If interested in upgrading to IMS 11 within the next 2 years, press star 2. If no upgrade plan at this time, please press star 3. Please vote now. Question number five. We hope you enjoyed the teleconference today. Please let us know if you are interested in receiving additional information or follow-up regarding the products discussed today. If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. Once again, question number five. We hope you have enjoyed the teleconference today. Please let us know if you are interested in receiving additional information or follow-up regarding the products discussed today. If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. Please vote now. That does conclude today's survey, and thank you for your participation. Now let's move to your questions. To ask your question, please press the star key, followed by the digit 1 on your telephone at any time. Once again, to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone. And at this time, I'll turn the call over to our speaker while we wait for questions.
All right, thanks. This is Rich. Anybody has a question, please go ahead.
Our first question does come from Patrick Thornton. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Pat. I have a question about the Quiesce command. Is the recovery point, that timestamp, is that eligible to use for a change of cum timestamp, a Gen JCLCA?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Okay.
Right. Yeah, and it's exactly the same that you would get today if you issued the DBR command.
And is there any response when you issue the command? Is there how do I get the timestamp? Do I have to read the recon?
The I'm trying. There is a message that's sent, and I do not recall offhand whether that message includes the timestamp, but I'm fairly certain. Well, I'll just have to. I don't know for sure. It should be available in the version 11 manuals in the Info Center, and I'll try to figure that out while I'm answering other questions here. I'm sorry, I don't know offhand.
Okay.
I can't. I think it does, but I'm not absolutely sure, and I hate to speculate.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Once again, to ask a question, please press star 1. Denise Jeffers, your line is open.
Good morning, Rich. How are you doing?
Good, Denise.
Question about dynamic ACV dynamic allocation. Do you need to have DRD in place for that?
No.
Or is it dependent?
No, it's not DRD dependent at all.
Okay.
Our next question does come from Peter Sievertson. Your line is open.
Hi, Rich. Phoning you here from Edinburgh. It's a little bit dark over here, but I hope you're having a good day so far.
I love Edinburgh.
Yeah, and the question kind of relates to the new ODBM address space, and I was kind of looking at page 27 and wondering in my own mind, like, for example, if I had an IP stack and IMS Connect on the second LPAR where you're outrouting between the primary and the secondary SCI to with respect to workload managing, I'm wondering kind of like, given that Sysplex Distributor is probably doing some sort of management from the get-go into the ISP stack front-end to IMS Connect, is there kind of another kind of confusion or another, maybe it's an opportunity really, for workload managing the ODBMs across the LPARs?
Yes. Yeah, I think there would be. I think the configuration you're talking about where you had multiple IMS connects on multiple LPARs, as you would likely have in a, right, and you could use Sysplex Distributor to distribute the connections from the remote guys into IMS Connect.
So therefore, you're saying that our opportunity for workload management happens more at, and that kind of configuration would happen. The opportunity happens at Sysplex Distributor. We wouldn't be actually looking at goals for ODBM, for example.
You're distributing from one IMS Connect to multiple ODBMs, right?
Are the ODBMs part of the enclave, for example?
Well, the ODBMs, the ODBMs are not known by the remote guys, like the CICS or WebSphere or the DB2 stored procedures or whatever connecting IMS Connect. They're not aware that there are multiple ODBMs behind IMS Connect. They would just connect to that one IMS Connect, or if you had multiple, TCP, multiple IMS Connects to one of those.
Right. So, let's go back to your point then. If we only had one IP stack and one LPAR, which is unlikely, but let's say we did, and two LPARs like you've got here, how would we manage the workload across the two ODBMs? How would we balance it?
Well, there's two possibilities. One of them is that, the database is only available in one of those IMSs. Then it would be your connect request would go to that IMS. The other possibility, the more likely one, the one you're talking about, I believe, is a data sharing environment where you could get to the database either way.
Correct.
And I'm afraid I'm not absolutely sure how that works. Something I need to know, and I don't believe that Kyle Charlet even mentioned that in his teleconference. I was hoping,
right.
I'll just have to figure. I apologize. I don't know off my top of my head how that.
No, it's kind of interesting.
Works if it's a round robin, or if there's an exit routine in IMS Connect that might be able to do the distribution.
Thanks very much, Rich. Appreciate your answer.
Yeah.
Denise Jeffers, your line is open.
Denise, I already asked my questions.
Thank you. At this time, we show no further questions. We do have another question just queued up. Patrick Thornton, your line is open.
Hi, this is Pat. I had a question about the Quies command again. Can you issue a Quies on a change of cum group? I noticed in the documentation, I think it mentioned data DBDS group.
I don't think that it's available in a CA group.
Okay.
It's either a database or a data group.
You can do it on a DBDS group?
Yes.
Okay. That's it.
All right.
Thank you, Rich.
William Alexander, your line is open.
Hi, Bill.
Yo. On the DDQS, work with DD2? In other words, if you had transactions or BMPs that were running to both updating up both IMS databases and DB2 databases at the same time, would the Quies have the ability to make it over to DB2 and set itself up properly?
It will not Quies anything in DB2. I mean, you can issue the command, and the application programs may be accessing DB2, but there will be no Quies of DB2.
Okay.
So
is there any future plans for that, you know, or have there been any requests for that? Or
it's not in version 11, obviously.
Right.
I think it's an extension that would be, I don't know if there's a requirement in yet, but I can see that there would be, and it's kind of an obvious thing that we would want to do in the future, but I don't know. I mean, obviously, I can't say what would be in a future release, but I think it's a reasonable extension.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Sure.
Once again, we show no further questions at this time.
Okay. And the I tried to do a quick check of the question that Pat asked originally about the message that's sent out during at Quies time, and I have not found it in my quick check. So. I apologize for not being able to tell you exactly what that message would be. Any more questions?
At this time, we show no further questions.
Well, then I'd like to thank everyone for calling in, and those who asked questions, I thank you for your questions, and I encourage you to look further at IMS 11. I think it's really a terrific enhancement for IMS users. Thank you.